I'd like now to welcome to the program Morris Roives. He is the lead actor, the only actor in the one-man play Just a Gigolo by Stephen Lowe, and Vanessa Rawlings Jackson, who is the producer of this play, which is being performed on Saturday, Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and 2 o'clock on Sunday at the Santa Fe Playhouse. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
Welcome. Thank you.
So the person whom you are playing, Morris, is a kind of actor in the great drama of the extended D.H. Lawrence saga. His name is Angelo or Angelino Ravagli. Who was this person?
He was a Capitano de Bersaglieri of the Italian army, Mussolini's special forces, and they never said anything. They call themselves the men with feathers in their hat. And wives are not supposed to speak. It's all sort of hush-hush and secret. Why, I don't know. And anyway, he was he's the motivation for the gardener in Lady Chatterley's Lover, who becomes the lover of Lady Chatterley. And he was the motivation, if you like, or the inspiration for that. Lawrence did. That's it, really. I mean, I think he's a very interesting character. I mean, it's always about Lawrence and it's always about Frida. And he's in the shadows all the time, kind of thing. And so this is bringing, in a sense, to bring him out of the shadows, out of the, from behind the, how would you call it, the intellectual person of Lawrence, I guess.
He was, of course, Frida's third husband.
Right.
And
her lover while she was still with D.H. Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, he came to America immediately after Lawrence's death, but had obviously had an affair with her while they were living in Italy, and stayed here and for nearly 30 years. Didn't marry Frida until 1950, although he came here in 1930. And there is a story that she finally married him because he was about to be expelled from the U.S. for moral turpitude.
Really?
So the story
goes. What kind of moral turpitude?
Well,
sex and dancing, I think. And it was quite strange because the other Red Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Down in Albuquerque, we had a group of ladies from the towers, and some of them had known him and had known Saki as well, who ran the hotel out there. They were in raucous laughter when certain stuff was mentioned about, especially about Lady Brett
Lady
Smith.
Dorothy Brett,
oh God.
But he was a fascinating character because he worked the ranch. He developed all the buildings there and was, as he says in the play, you know, general manager of the estate, but completely ignored. There has never been anything written about him. You can Google him, and it'll give you some information about him.
Yeah, but not a whole lot. I was Googling him
last night. No. And the really interesting thing, without giving too much away about the play, is that by being left the rights of the book, Lady Chatterley's Lover, which, of course, was worth nothing when he was given it, his family have become multimillionaires through the fact that it's been made into a film, it's been televised, and yet nobody really knows that.
Now, it was the book Lady Chatterley's Lover was worth nothing because it was a banned book.
Yeah, absolutely banned.
And then when it was unbanned, the lover, who the inspiration for the lover in D.H. Lawrence's book becomes a millionaire in his whole family.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a moment in the play when I often think, did Frida leave him the rights almost to say, this is what you caused, you're not going to make anything out of it, but here you are. And not knowing that, of course, because it was the reason for the obscenity trial in the UK, which then meant that publication of books that used rather naughty words could be published, it became the leader of that. And they still, I think we're right in saying, they still, the family still earns the rights because the 80 years has not passed.
And quite right, really, because, I mean, he did so much work up there. He built the ranch up there for them and everything and didn't get the credit for him. And I just find him a remarkable character. I mean, a great character, but and so good and loyal to Frida, I think. And I think there was a great love there as well. You know, he spent almost twice the time with her than she had with Lawrence. And he only knew Lawrence, what, 3 years, wasn't it, before Lawrence died? And he just did a lot of work up at the ranch and stuff. And I'm very fond of him. I enjoy playing him. He's mischievous and that. But and his paintings were better than Lawrence's. We went up and visited, didn't we, when we did research up at Tars. And what was the name of the lady again?
An amazing lady who's now 100, called Jenny Vincent.
Sharp as a razor.
Oh, yeah. And she had known Angelo and Frida and had danced, I think, with Angelo in her time. And she showed us a painting he had done. So when Lawrence was died and Frida had the paintings, she gave him the paintings. And they're really not... well... I mean, some people might like them now, but they're very naive in their actual execution. So,
what's their subject?
Naked people, mostly.
Naked people. The rape of the Sabine woman in Canaigo. What's the lady in that draws the well proportioned?
Belle Cook.
Yeah, they're a bit like. Do you know Belle Cook's work? No.
They're all large ladies, yeah. And a lot, but
Lawrence, almost cartoonish.
Yeah. But the reason they were banned was that they actually showed, not only were the people naked, but they also showed pubic hair, which was why they were banned. They were seen to be obscene. So here he was with a banned book.
The whole body is not obscene, but a little bit of hair.
Well, yes, because, I mean, you're talking about the 1920s when there was that sort of post-Victorian... fig leaves over certain parts of Greek statues.
Right.
And suddenly Lawrence produces these paintings, which are full, naked, frontal nudity. Yeah. And the police were called in.
No deceit.
As he says. Yeah. But the police were called in.
Now, there is art or projections of art incorporated into the play. What are the paintings that we're looking at?
Nine of them, isn't it?
There's actually eight, because there's the story is based on the night that Angelo sold the paintings to Saki Karavas at the La Fonda Hotel and Towers, where the paintings still hang.
Yeah, he's trying to get the money to go home to Italy, because he's got no money. He's absolutely broke. He's living on the ranch on his own, isn't he?
The ranch which he helped build and Frida gave to the University of New Mexico. So he was a sort of... non-paying tenant, but with no rights. So the projections are of eight of those nine paintings, all signed with the name Lorenzo and not D.H. Lawrence.
What was that about?
Well, nobody's quite sure. I mean, whether it was that they were painted in Italy, whether he was going through, I am absorbing Italy, or it was a pet name that we don't really know, but his paintings were signed Lorenzo. So, in fact, having one, you would need to know that Lorenzo was D.H. Lawrence to put any value on
him. I think it's some kind of romantic name he's given himself, to...
Did he want to divorce his painting life from his writing life?
I don't think so.
I mean, I think he... I think it was probably how he was known. I mean, for instance, you asked before the interview, is Morris or Maurice? So I assume that in Italy, he wouldn't be known as David, which was his first name, but as Lawrence, which would be Lorenzo in Italian.
Right.
So he may have just been using it because it was the name he was known there, because they were painted in Italy.
And he probably thought it was more romantic than Lawrence anyway, so.
Or maybe he knew they'd be banned and he'd never get caught.
I always have a feeling that there's a passage in the play, and I won't talk about it in case you've got to see it, but where Angelo refers to Frida and a lesson that they've learned, or that she's been speaking about. And I think Angelo knew that lesson, learned it, appreciated it, whatever. Lawrence probably understood it, but didn't know how to enact it, so to speak. I think it was all words and dialogue and dreams and romantic sexual images and stuff like that. But
well, of course, when Angelo came into their life, D.H. Lawrence was very ill by then, right. Probably dying. And I think that, I'm almost certain he was probably impotent. So for him, the sort of masculinity of Angelo must have appeared attractive as well as a challenge.
The whole play, I mean, it's based on a character about whom not all that much is known. So, I mean, can you talk a little bit about how it came to be, the whole writing process that Stephen Lowe went through and the research? And
it came out of conversations here a year ago, 2 years ago, when we brought
When we did Stephen's play, Empty Bed Blues.
Empty Bed Blues.
Right, which was wonderful.
Yeah, and we took Stephen up to the ranch at Taos. And I think we saw the paintings and we heard the story of how they ended up there.
And I'd done a one-man play before, and Vanessa had always sort of said to me, you should do another one-man play, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, not unless it's a new play, because the one I did before, I was the second to play the role and played it very differently from the first guy and got rave reviews and stuff like that. But it didn't do me much good in that sense, because somebody else had done it. So it was all coming out of that kind of conversation. Okay. And we started discussing Lady Chatterley, blah, 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 blah. Angelo came up, because hardly anybody had known him, nobody talks about him, but he's a very important character. He was there all the time. He built the ranch, he did everything for them. And so that's, in a way, how it came.
Yeah, I think also what's important is that both Stephen and Morris, we talked a lot about them doing a play together. And then during the Olympics, the run-up to the Olympics in Britain, there was a number of funds that were about the Culture Olympiad, which was very much part of how the UK, or London, never quite sure I should say the UK, won the Olympics. We managed to get a small grant to do the research behind the character, with Morris researching the character of the man and Stephen researching the story of the man. And we got enough money to take it to a point where we had the outline of the story. We then got an Arts Council grant to take it to a play, but only as far as a reading at Nottingham Lakeside Arts Centre for the D.H. Lawrence Symposium. We then got co-producers involved, which was Assembly, which was the Edinburgh Festival, the Fringe, and Lakeside Arts Centre to take it to a full production. So in a way, the whole process has been a step-by-step process, and we always knew that we wanted to bring it to New Mexico, because obviously that was where Angelo had lived for 30 years.
Right.
So, who knows where it will go next.
Very interesting. So we're talking about the play Just a Gigolo, and talk about the title for a moment.
Well, that was Stephen, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Stephen. What was it called? What was the title we had before?
Dirty Pictures.
Dirty Pictures.
Of course.
And we thought that might just bring in some of the wrong audience. Just a Gigolo was because Stephen listened to the song Just a Gigolo and felt that it was of the period when Angelo would have come here, but also it expressed, as, and we won't give it away because it's a very important part of the story, a lot about the character, or the way that he was seen, rather than who he was, but the way he was seen.
Right.
So that's how the title...
Yeah, I've changed the song slight with whatever. It was an artist's interpretation of what we did with the swords.
So the play is written kind of with an Italian accent, and you are doing it as an Italian.
It was very difficult, because when he presented it, I looked at it, and it was quite exciting, because it is just a stream of consciousness. There's hardly any punctuation and stuff, and so it took a while to learn it, and I learned it all. But then I had to unlearn it, because the way we speak, we try to transfer pictures from our head so people understand us through language. So I had to then unlearn it and learn all the pictures, like a comic strip, if you like, so it's in my head. So that I wanted the whole thing to come out almost like beads of sweat on your forehead, as opposed to it's natural, it should work. And that makes it dangerous, exciting to work on every night, because I learn something new every night, and we have no prompter. There's, I'm up in the wire without a safety net, if you like.
Wow.
So, and Vanessa's son, who is our stage director and does all the mechanics and, like, you know, all the sound stuff, he can get me out of a mess if I give him a signal, but so far he hasn't. He just throws the papers in the air and says, to hell, he'll get out of it one way or another. He's got to get out of it. So it makes it interesting, you know. But also what I'm trying to do is to combine my film technique along with stage technique. So sometimes some of the pauses and things are more important than the lines themselves. So the whole thing, and it was interesting because one of the ladies from Towers, wasn't it? And she was very moved by it and stuff, you know, because she said it was so realistic. But then again, the theatre down there.
In Albuquerque.
Yeah, the setup. It's interesting because it's so intimate and they're as close as you and I are at the moment almost. So that was quite interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think also the way that Stephen wrote it, and you've seen the script, it doesn't have any punctuation, but also he wrote it as if an Italian was speaking it.
Yeah, very much so.
So you almost, as you're reading it, when we got the first draft, we were almost speaking to each other with a stilted Italian accent.
Exactly.
But it's his Italian, you know, and he also writes it because it's like a stream of consciousness. And he's been an actor as well, that he's put in his act, you can almost hear him acting it as he's typing it, kind of thing, which didn't make it easy to learn. And people kept saying, how's your Italian accent? I said, well, people think I sound like an ice cream man, and that's exactly how it should be, because ice cream men don't speak perfect English, you know. Yeah.
But it's also interesting because, of course, as he says in the play, Angelo learned English from D.H. Lawrence, yeah, who had a broad East Midlands accent, which shortens all the vowels, tightens all the vowels. Then he came and he lived in America for 30 years. Who knows what he sounded like?
Right.
You know.
I think he sounds pretty much like the way I am.
I think so.
Well, there we have it. The play is called Just a Gigolo by Stephen Lowe. And it is happening here in Santa Fe this Friday and Saturday at 7:30 at the Santa Fe Playhouse, and on Sunday at 2 in the afternoon. Morris Roeves is the actor, Vanessa Rawlings-Jackson, producer. And for more information, you can call the Santa Fe Playhouse at 505-988-4262 or go to santafeplayhouse.org. And there's also a link to a Vimeo link to a little piece of the play that I will put on my website, santaferadiocafe.org, linking to it from you guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Yeah, thank you for giving us the interview.
Thank you.